This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Sounds like we're in for some temperature fluctuations over the next few days, huh?
Yeah, just a tad. I'm happy-go-lucky here that it's still above normal at this time of the year.
Yeah, that's a gift, by all means. What'd you say, 45 maybe today?
45 today, 49 tomorrow, then Monday down to about 38. For the high.
Okay. Well, that's pretty doggone tolerable weekend weather, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's right at the dividing line of getting out to the golf course. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. Well, I was looking at the forecast out in the western Corn Belt, and it looks like there's a pretty good snowstorm this next week, but I think it's missing us, if I'm not mistaken. But it was going to come out of Nebraska, Kansas, move up through the western part of Iowa, and up into Minnesota. And maybe part of Wisconsin, the last track I saw on it, but I think it's going to miss us.
Yeah, it might skirt us just a bit. I think the temperatures in our area are still going to be too high for anything major to happen here.
Yeah, that's good.
Yep.
That is good. And we missed the big East Coast thing, so we've been all right here.
I remember last year at this time, I was stuck in an alley trying to get to my parking lot. So I'm happy for anything like this.
Well, I was stuck in Chicago the other day, which was good, and I couldn't get down to North Carolina where I was supposed to be because the ice storm in the Carolinas and the snowstorm. And yeah, it's been a weird winter, but we've sort of dodged the bullet.
Yeah, I know the wood you're knocking on.
Yes, that was my head.
Oh,
thank you, Roger.
All right,
we'll check in with you again in a few minutes, Roger Badish. In the newsroom, we'll keep us apprised of what's going on with the weather. Argentina's weather became a market discussion topic yesterday, helping light up soybeans to the tune of a gain of about 12 to 13 cents a bushel. Corn went up about 5 to 6, wheat up about 6 cents, and some guy is talking about the possibility of $7 corn this summer. It closed at 371 yesterday, and a weather statistician is saying maybe $7 a bushel. We'll talk a little more about that coming up here in a few minutes on the Saturday morning show. Land values. What's land worth? We do visit that subject from time to time simply because it is such a big topic of discussion in the countryside. And are foreigners coming in to buy our land? Every now and then you're like, the Arabs were looking at some land down the road there. The Chinese may be buying here. Or the Mormon Church. There's another one. The Mormon Church is one of the biggest holders of farmland in the United States. Did you know that? They have widespread holdings in Illinois and in Florida and I think all over the United States. Pretty highly regarded owner of farmland. They take good care of it, as you might expect. So anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that. Ray Brownfield from LandPro LLC coming in here to be with us momentarily on the Saturday morning show on WGN Radio.
At the Louisville Farm Show, you'll have a chance to see a brand new planter at Case IH. Tony McClelland with Case IH explained to me just how new the 2000 Series Early Riser Planter is.
It is basically designed and rethought from the ground up. We've touched about everything on the planter to address agronomic design. It's simple, durable, and it's basically designed for increased productivity. The new 2000 Series planter is it's built for speed and accuracy at higher speeds, and part of that is durability and productivity. But, the productivity, it's not just about planting speed, which we do offer more production through higher speeds, but just the ease of use and the ease of caring for, the quickness that you can make settings and adjustments and features that you can control from the cab and features that are automatically controlled that you don't need to worry about.
Thanks, Tony. We'll see you and the new Early Riser Planter in the Case IH booth at Louisville. Ray Brownfield, Land Pro LLC, from time to time our guest here on the radio, and we always enjoy your visit because we learn something from you about the land market, what's happening. It's a very hot topic of discussion always in the small town coffee shop, even when the land market maybe isn't rip-roaring wild, but you still have the discussions that take place there. How much are we down on the land price on farmland in our region now, Ray?
It depends so much on soil quality, location, income, you know, producing opportunities. But let's say on the high quality, what we call in this region the Class A, in the calendar year of 2015, maybe down 5% in that range. It really depends. Now, when you get into the land, it's got some drainage problems, some non-tillable, some other issues like that. It can be down as much as 10 or 12%. Again, it depends on the area so much, but that's kind of an average right now.
I have heard some estimates from so-called experts, people who really watch the ag economic scene, that after all is said and done, we could see maybe a 20 to 25% retracement in the value of farmland in our region. Do you concur with that, or you think that's a little bit much?
I think it's possible, Max. Think about it, though. In a five-year period of time, each year, we went up 10 to 15%. So that's a retracement, even at 25%. That's not a terrible shrinkage if you look at the trend that we're into. So, yes, that's possible, I suppose, if commodity prices stay relatively like they are even in 2017. Yeah, I think that's very possible that could possibly happen. And also with interest rates maybe increasing, it'll probably slow this market down to some degree. But nevertheless, I will tell you this, there's still high demand for high-quality ground right now.
We shouldn't forget, I suppose, that the Federal Reserve has indeed enhanced the opportunity to buy land on credit in recent years for a number of years. But even as rates rise, I mean, they sure haven't risen much yet and are not expected to for some time, right?
I agree with that. I don't think it's going to have a major impact until you would get up into that 5, 6, 7% range. Today, we're far below that. And you know, I just saw today in a paper on 30-year mortgage rates, and I suppose that is more maybe for the housing industry. It actually went down here recently. So I think that to do a major increase in the interest rates with the given economy we now have and may have for the foreseeable future, I don't think they're going to want to do that very bad.
There are still some parcels of very good farmland that are coming onto the market. And I know you've been involved in a couple of these here of late. Great tillable land with fine productivity, well-drained soils. What's happening when that land comes onto the market? Why is it being sold?
Well, usually it's families of whom have gotten to the point that there's a number of people involved maybe in the family, and they're looking to divide, to take that money in other directions. And some may do a 1031 in other land, perhaps. But to have a number of people having undivided interest sometimes creates some issues within the family from a management viewpoint and so on and so forth. Lots of times we see that. We see the estates that are being settled, too, that the people, the only income they've got maybe would be from the liquidity of that farm. So that's usually the reason. I don't see yet today any issues with problems and bankruptcies and things like that in the farming sector. We're starting to hear maybe down the road some of that could come, but I think we're a ways off from some of that, frankly.
And there are a number of farmers still able to buy land and are more than happy to do so when it comes on the market near them, or perhaps in a 1031 exchange you were talking about, they need to reinvest?
There really are. I was at an auction recently in Bloomington, Illinois. 1,448 acres came up in various parcels, 14 parcels in three geographic locations. And the farmers were together in their given regions to buy that land. And they really were good at that. They really didn't overpay, I don't think, in today's market, but I think they paid a good market level to get it, to add to their existing operation, which tells me there's still strong demand. And I think there's still, we're not in terrible shape economically. Now, if this keeps on going, it may change that, but there's still demand.
As you know, I was in New Zealand recently, and I heard from a farmer who said he wanted to be with me. He planned to make that trip. He wanted to see New Zealand's agriculture, but during the time that he would have been there, there was an 80-acre parcel next to him that was going to be sold at auction, and he said he wanted to be sitting right there in the crowd
to participate and perhaps buy that parcel. We still see that, don't we?
We really do, particularly if it's a smaller piece like an 80 that's adjacent to your own farm. You know, it probably makes sense to try to join it if you possibly can. It may never come on the market again in generations to come. And even on the bigger tracts that we work with, we're seeing the same feeling that, you know, it's really a high-quality farm. It may never come on the market for gosh only knows how long from now. So those are things people look at. And, yeah, the market's not at 14 or 15,000 acre anymore, maybe as it was on a top end, but still not unusual to hear 11.5 to the 12 range for the really, really good stuff, even 13 in some cases.
I was just going to ask you what kind of prices we've been hearing of late. Now, would this be land that's potentially in the path of progress? You know, it's prime for urban sprawl not too far down the road.
Not at all. In fact, that probably doesn't have much bearing on today's buying. People know it, of course, and they're thinking maybe several generations down, maybe their grandkids, but they're not buying for that reason. They're looking at it from the viewpoint of what it'll do for them over their lifetimes and their children's lifetimes to add to what they have to really keep staying in a good farming business.
You were involved in an auction. I know I was reading here a while back you had a parcel that involved both productive farmland and recreational land, and it was not far out of the metropolitan area. That's kind of a win-win, I could imagine, although there are probably farmers who want to just have productive land. They just want good, flat, well-drained land on which to grow crops. But as far as that outside investor who might want a little piece of ground out here and a place to go visit and picnic in the woods and hunt in the woods and fish in the creek, or do you say creek, something like that I can imagine would be appealing.
It's a special market, and you're exactly right. The true farmer type of a buyer may not be as enhanced with that sort of a situation because they're buying on tillable acres, what will really make them some money in the long pull. But there is a special market out there for recreational property, which would have some income-producing potential with the tillable ground, like the one farm that I currently am working with right now. And so we're seeing some people, particularly the Chicago area and so on and so forth, say, you know, what? That's not that far out. It wouldn't be too bad to have my own place I can go to, hunt some deer, have a picnic, and have it quiet, but also have some income. So, yes, there is a market for that.
I remember in Bloomington, Illinois, sitting in the dentist chair down there some 35 years ago, Dr. Denny McDonald, the late Dr. McDonald, for whom my wife worked. He was very, very wired in the community and watched what was happening with farmland. And Dr. McDonald one day said to me while he had me in the chair and various tools in my mouth and both of his hands in there, said, did you hear the Arabs are buying some land out here east of town? They've come in to buy some good, prime McLean County farmland. And that was always the rumor. The Brazilians were buying, the Japanese were buying. And in fact, back in those days, Ray, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, by law, started tracking these foreign purchases. They still do, don't they?
They still do. And in fact, if there is someone internationally that comes in and buys land, there's a special form that has to go to the FSA, USDA, letting that fact be known that it is being tracked. And there's even certain states in the United States that do not still allow foreign investment or corporation for that matter. But that's still being watched. Yes, it is. But we really don't see much. You know, somebody might say, what about the Chinese? Well, right now we know they've got some financial issues, but that'll probably pass as time goes on. But they still have a tremendous need for food and fiber over there. And we haven't seen, to my knowledge, I've heard of some issues or things out there of people, but I really haven't heard of anything here in our region, in the Midwest particularly, of any major purchases from the Chinese. Now, that may not be true, but I don't see it. I haven't seen it yet.
In the Southwest, I saw the story a few days ago that Saudi interests were buying farmland. They were doing so for the production of forage, that they were shipping that hay to their herds in Saudi Arabia. And it's become controversial because some of the locals there are saying, well, in essence, they are shipping our water, because they're using this valuable resource, the water, to produce that hay and to ship to the dairy herds over there. One could imagine that could be a hot-button issue. But right at the moment, you don't feel in this part of the country there's any widespread foreign investment in good prime farmland.
Certainly not to my knowledge. Not that I know everything out there, but I really haven't heard it. And I would usually hear about it if it was going on. So now sometimes those foreign entities will go through various layers of folks and try to, you know, not be fully discoverable, if you will, And that's possible. But again, usually we hear about it somewhere along the in our industry.
What about the entertainers? I remember you telling me a story a couple of years ago about a very well-known comedian, actor, who wanted to go out and buy some farmland. He was a very shrewd buyer, I remember you sharing with me, as you took him past the fields, and I think he took a pass in that particular instance on buying. But do you still see some high-profile individuals who say, yeah, I want a piece of ground?
We do. In that particular case, he did end up buying some ground in central Illinois, and looking backwards, he did a good job. And the realtor that represented him did a nice job as well. So that can happen. It's a highly specialized group of people as well. They have their own business agents, and of course, everybody's trying to get into their money. But I've seen a lot of that in California in the vineyards industry, because that's more of a romantic type of an ownership, to say that you have a vineyard up in Napa or in that area. We see some of them in the country people into Texas, into the ranches and that sort of thing, but they're comfortable with the ranching industry because they're part of it. So we do see that. I haven't really seen too much here in this region that I'm aware of again, but certainly it's something that I know they do look at, and they do from time.
Ray Brownfield, long involved in farm real estate, the farm real estate business as a realtor and as a farmland manager. We appreciate all of the years of expertise you bring to the microphone when we have a chance to visit. Land Pro LLC is the firm, right?
Thank you, Max. It certainly is.
We'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you.
Well, the guy speaking at a meeting in Chicago this week said corn could get $7 a bushel this summer. That set off all the comments and the online chats and all where the farmers weigh in. And they said, oh, it's this guy smoking anyway. Bill Kirk, who owns a firm called Weather Trends 360, says corn prices could hit $6.50 to $7 this summer. He says there'll be lower yields this year in both the United States and in Brazil. And the wet spring in most of this country, thanks to El Nino. He says there'll be a wetter April. It could delay planting. He doesn't expect farmers to see a lot of flooding like last year. But then once crops are in the ground, he says there'll be a freeze in late May. And then this weather statistician Bill Kirk says El Nino will become La Nina in December. The transition will cause drought and warmer than normal temperatures throughout the Corn Belt. He anticipates very dry weather once the U.S. crop is in the ground, which could cause moderate to severe drought stress in June and July. And he warns of a risk to pollination from June 26 to July 9 due to an extreme heat wave. This guy is throwing everything at us here, saying that we could get $6.50 to $7 corn. Well, corn yesterday was at 371.5 for the March contract, up 6 cents for the day. December, 392.75. That was up 5.25 for the day. Soybeans gained on talk that Argentina is getting dry. March beans up 13.75 to 881.5. November beans up 12. That put them at $8.92. And a wheat gained yesterday, but March up 6.75 to 479 a bushel. July wheat up 6.25 to 490 at a quarter. I've been talking to several of my friends in Iowa, Roger, and they are ready for it to be over.
Yeah, I would imagine. You know, there's the good news and bad news about the Iowa caucuses. The bad news is it takes so long for it to get over, but it's the first one to get over.
Yeah. You know? It's and those folks are getting robocalls, mm-hmm. and, of course, the barrage of television commercials. It's a huge business bump in that state. You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know if I haven't seen it quantified as to how much it adds to the Iowa economy. But, for example, the Des Moines television stations are raking in money left and right. And those in Cedar Rapids and Waterloo and the Quad Cities, being because of all of the television spots. But boy, folks are really growing weary of it out there.
Well, I can imagine. They can't wait for Monday to be over.
You know, on the other hand, I've had a couple of parents tell me what an amazing civics lesson is played out right before their eyes, and their kids, in many instances, get to meet all the candidates. And they said it's really kind of special for, you know, a kid, you know, junior high student or high school student,
sure.
who really perhaps is thinking about politics. I don't know why, but if they're considering a career in politics, You know, it really kind of helps light a fire for them, you know, just the fact that they're able to meet one of these people, then it prompts them to more closely watch what goes on in the national stage.
And it also helps get the young people involved more than than they may have been, because as you and I and many millions know, voter turnout has been dropping off over quite a number of years. Even though there was a bump or two with President Obama's first campaign. But, you know, this is a great way to try to ignite the younger people to turn out and to keep turning out.
Yeah, they're all contemplating, what will the millennials do? They're different, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Yes, they are.
Oh, sure, like we've never had young people before.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. We'll catch you later. Have a great weekend, Roger.
Thanks, you too, sir.
Roger Badish in the WGN Newsroom. Orion Samuelson, Samuelson Says, is a part of our broadcast every Saturday morning, and it's brought to you by Wink Products.
Government over-regulation is a topic that we've talked about many times, and I'm hearing it over and over again this winter, attending farm organization meetings, the Farm Bureau Convention held earlier in January in Orlando, Florida, and this week, San Diego, California, at the annual convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Government over-regulation, whether it be in marketing, whether it be in the environment, the EPA is not a well-liked organization by the farm and ranch groups in the United States. And as we sit here at the trade show convention in San Diego, we hear about the EPA and the WOTUS, Waters of the U.S. And Tracy Bruner, the new president of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, said that he considers this to be one of the biggest challenges facing agriculture. He said it deals with property rights. It deals with how you can manage your farming or ranching operation by telling you that ditches that maybe have water running in them for a couple of months during snow melt then become year-round waterways in the eyes of the EPA. And that means they are subject to regulations. You can't farm that property the way you normally would. You have rules that are put in place by government officials sitting in their Washington offices, probably never having visited a farm or a ranch in their lifetime, but writing rules on how farmers and ranchers should deal with the environment, should deal with work rules on the ranch or the farm through OSHA, and also dealing with trade. That's the other topic that's coming up time and again, is the Trans-Pacific Trade Partnership. The need to get that done by Congress this year because it's important to our agricultural trade volume. And at the Cattlemen's Convention, they talk about the importance of that agreement for the beef industry here in the United States. So I guess the word from here to Congress is quit passing over regulation. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
16 minutes before 6 of the Saturday morning show from WGN Radio. Max Armstrong with you. Thanks to Bob Ferguson, the engineer, for spinning the dials there. Mr. Flying Fader Fingers. We always appreciate Bob's help. We'll be in Louisville. Yeah, the big National Farm Machinery Show is coming up week after next. And we'll be down there. I'll be at the Case IH booth. If you're going to be there at the Louisville show on Wednesday and Thursday from 11 o'clock in the morning until 12 noon, I'll be at Case IH. And we'll have some hats to sign there. And if you've got any old tractor pictures, some real nice high-resolution tractor pictures, bring them along because I feature them, of course, on the television show in Max's Tractor Shed. It'd be good to see you there in Louisville. Hope you can get to the show, and by all means, come by and see us. Case IH folks have a big planter introduction that we are talking about, of course, and I understand with the doors open that morning, they'll have kind of a ceremony over there for the brand new early riser planter on that opening day on Wednesday in Louisville. Well, the folks who like the old John Deere equipment get together every now and then to trade stuff, trade ideas, buy parts, all of that stuff, and what they call the Gathering of the Green. Ken Reese is involved in that. He's helping plan that event coming up in the Quad Cities. Ken?
Ken, to begin with, tell us about the Gathering of the Green. How long has this been going on, and how often do you have such a gathering?
Well, interestingly, the gathering has been going on since the year 2000, and the 2016 conference will be our ninth one, and we host it every other year in the Quad Cities. And as you know, it's a convention-style conference dedicated to John Deere antique two-cylinder and new generation tractor and implement enthusiasts.
How many folks will usually attend?
In 2014, the last conference, we had 2,400 people from 35 states in the USA, 40 from Canada, 7 from Australia, and 2 from England. It's become a global event.
With the proximity to the John Deere headquarters, do you get some of those folks attending, some who are still employed by the company?
Oh, yes, without question. Retired people and, you know, a lot of their middle management and even the people that work in the factory. And interestingly, this year at our opening night reception on Wednesday, the 16th of March, Michael Mack, who is one of the presidents of Deere, will be in Davenport to welcome us to the Quad Cities.
Very nice. Are there instructional sessions? I know some of these winter meetings that clubs have sometimes involve how-to sessions. Is that the case for the Gathering of the Green?
Without question, I had mentioned 60 workshops, and those are restoration and historical workshops that deal with everything from decals to electrical topics to painting and sheet metal, fine-tuning of a two-cylinder tractor, power troll, hydraulics, new generation tractors, just basic restoration. We have just a raft of wonderful workshops led by the best leaders in the hobby.
That's fantastic that there's that kind of learning experience and that you have members who are so willing to share.
People snap up right away. They're more than happy. They love the fact that we have this kind of a conference, which is dedicated to all of those John Deere green and yellow people, and they're really well-schooled in their field, and people just kind of flock to those workshops. They're really well done.
Talk about the vendors. What are some of the things that they'll bring that they'll have available to sell that good John Deere fans could purchase?
Well, the vendors, we will have right now, I think we have about 68 vendors who have sent in applications, and some of them will actually bring trailers into the 33,000 square foot vendor hall at the beautiful River Center in downtown Davenport. And they'll be offering repair and restoration services, new, used, and reproduction parts, manuals, literature, tires, signs, art, decals, toys, clothing, memorabilia, and more.
If you're into the green, you'll find it there then, huh?
Absolutely. Yep. You can't come to the gathering without going home with a treasure of some type.
Do people try to sell tractors there also? I mean, will somebody load up a tractor on a trailer, bring it in, set it out in the parking lot, put a sign on it and say, hey, I want to sell this?
Not usually. We really haven't focused on that very much. But one of our vendors last year sold one of his restored tractors that was sitting in the vendor hall. But, you know, there are people that will put notices up, bulletin boards that we have available and want to sell a tractor. And, you know, I really don't know whether people, when they're sitting around talking tractors, whether a tractor here and there might be sold or traded.
For each of us, it seems, into the old tractors, there's a personal connection. What is it for you? What was the first tractor? And what's the one that you love the most today?
Well, my grandfather was a John Deere dealer in Hillsdale, Illinois, just north of the Quad Cities for 47 years. So I grew up around John Deere's. Then I left and went off to college and ended up in the Chicago suburban area at the Maine Township High Schools working for 36 years. And before I retired, I bought an old John Deere B, a 1950B, and restored that. And then I bought a 1939B in 2002 and spent about 10 years restoring it, and it turned out beautifully. But I have a lot of John Deere green and yellow in my blood from my family.
10 years invested in a restoration suggests that a person might want to have a little patience or be blessed with some time to get the restoration done.
Well, I retired during this period, and I would do a little bit here and there, and we'd have other obligations, so I didn't work on it day and night. I know some of the restorers do that. They just absolutely, you know, they jump right into it and don't give up until it's done. But I did a little bit here and there, and I built a paint booth in my garage and did most of my own painting. And so it was a slow process, but I think I did it right because I went from the very beginning of the tractor to the end, and it was everything has been renewed, new gaskets, bushings, bearings, you know, gone through the engine, and so it turned out beautifully.
Ken, is there a registration fee for someone who wants to drive in for one day or maybe a couple of days?
Most people, Max, will go for, will come to the entire conference. They'll come in on Wednesday night or early Thursday morning and stay through Saturday. And I neglected to say that the dates of the conference are March 16th through the 19th. And it starts with an opening night reception on Wednesday night. And then we have workshops and vendors all day Thursday and Friday. And Friday night, we have a fun auction. Thursday night, we have Don McKinley, who will be our featured speaker that night. And then Saturday, workshops and also the vendor area with an ending banquet on Saturday evening. So, and the cost for the full conference is $40. But people can come for 1 or 2 days at $10. They pay at the door. And they can have a full day's activities, you know, whatever day they decide to attend.
A few weeks back, I helped handle one of the Mecum auction broadcasts. In fact, it originated out of Davenport, and there were some remarkable John Deere tractors there. In fact, I had a guy comment to me just this week. He said, I was watching one of those broadcasts. He said, all I saw was green. There was green all over the place. Well, there were quite a few, and some special tractors, some that were very few in terms of models made, they've achieved some rather lofty values, haven't they?
Oh, they really have. You know, there were a lot of the models, there were thousands made, but the people that jump on the ones where maybe there were only 10 or 12 tractors made, or maybe it was the first serial number in the run and maybe the last, maybe it was one of the variations that was very rare. And so those models bring big dollars.
Ken, thanks for filling us in on all the details. I would imagine someone could go to the website for more information, right?
Yes, sir. They can go to our website, which is www.gatheringofthegreen.com, and they can find out all the vendors that are coming. They can see the list of workshops and the times. They can also click on registration. It'll take them right to our registration page. It's really a user-friendly operation. And if they run into problems, we offer a phone number where they can call the Quad City Convention and Visitors Bureau, where their technical people will help them. And then we also have a Facebook page that gives a lot of information. And we have a call text number for information. That's 563-886-7383. And then there is an email information address. It's called info@gatheringofthegreen.com, info@gatheringofthegreen.com. And again, it's our website, which will take you through the whole process, is www.gatheringofthegreen.com.
All right. Ken Reese, thank you for the full rundown there on the Gathering of the Green, they call it. I got to get out there one of these years if they let me in the door. I don't know. They might rough me up. It could be a rough crowd there. Well, the complaints of the cattlemen are not falling on deaf ears, apparently. They have been talking about this market volatility in the futures markets of CME Group here in Chicago. And chairman of the CME Group, Executive Chairman Terry Duffy, certainly was there at the cattlemen's meeting in San Diego this week and said, yeah, we're listening, all right. It's a topic that Orion talked about with the Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Here's that short visit that Orion shares.
Always a pleasure to visit with Colin Woodall at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Looking at some interesting times, talk to me about the roller coaster ride the cattle industry has gone through the past few months.
Oh my goodness, it's been pretty wild when you look at the markets. You know, a year ago when we were in San Antonio, everybody was riding high. We were looking at some great prices, and then things at the end of the year started to go down, and the pressure really got tough. A portion of that was the fundamental changes. And the fact of the matter is it started raining in cattle country. That always has an impact on the marketplace. But one of the things that we have concern about right now is not so much the fundamentals. It's a lot of the variability, the volatility that we have seen in the marketplace in just one trading day. You know, we have had no changes in some cases on the fundamental side, but yet we have gone limit up or limit down. So we have a concern on what high-frequency trading is doing to try to drive that market, and we're trying to address that here in San Diego.
And we've seen the cattle market follow Wall Street a little bit, haven't we?
Oh, we have. You know, it's not unusual that we're down, because when you look at the stock market as a whole, when you look at other commodities, everything has got that downward pressure. You know, our concern is more about making sure that the cattle futures really work the way that they should and the way we need them to, because they are very important risk management tools. And we can always figure out how to manage downward times as long as the tools work the way they should.
Question I'm often asked is, are we near the bottom?
That's a question that I'm not even going to try to answer, because there's no telling what's going to happen. I think we need to be prepared for this to continue to go down. That's not what our industry wants to hear. That's not what we want to see. But the reality is, as we continue to grow our herd, that downward pressure is going to be there. Even though we have great demand from the consumer, those market issues are going to work against us a little bit more.
Always a pleasure, Colin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Orion.
Now, Orion was there in San Diego with the cattlemen and women this week. And as I said, CME Group is listening to what the cattle industry is saying, and they're talking about the possibility of implementing circuit breakers in the cattle futures market after these complaints about extreme volatility. Terry Duffy of the CME said the circuit breakers could be triggered when the prices decline sharply, so as he put it, so people don't get into panic-type selling on the way down. The cattleman told Duffy in a letter this month that the price swings are hurting the producer's ability to use the futures contracts to offset the risk of raising cattle. And Duffy says that high-frequency trading accounts for about 10% of the CME cattle market volume and about 50% of the overall daily volume of the CME futures market. So that's a topic that we may hear a little more about. All right. We have the news coming up with Veronica Carter here momentarily. Mike Steven will be along momentarily with Outside the Loop here on WGN Radio. Thanks to engineer Bob Ferguson, the big old Orion Samuelson. I'm Max Armstrong, along with those guys. We appreciate the chance to keep you some company this morning here on the Saturday morning show.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.